My daughter was on the hunt for some casual shoes a few weeks ago. Not to run in, she's already got those, but the kind of shoes that we used to call sneakers. Casual, comfortable, stylish. And the choices were, quite frankly, dizzying. Got me wondering, how and when did the humble sneaker or tennis shoe become such a huge part of our fashion culture? Well, an exhibit at the Toledo Museum of Art right now has the answer. It's called Out of the Box, The Rise of Sneaker Culture. It's a traveling exhibit from the Bata Shoe Museum in Toronto. That's where Elizabeth Semmelhack is senior curator. Elizabeth, so good to talk shoes with you.
My pleasure.
Well, we really are talking about cultural art when we track the evolution of sneaker culture, aren't we?
Yes, we really are. I mean, I think that one of the reasons why I love my job is that people casually think, perhaps, that footwear doesn't have important cultural meaning, but just ask the average man to slip on a pair of stilettos, and I bet that he would balk. And so it's incredibly important how integrated footwear is within our larger society, and that when you stop and start to study it, it's a very interesting entry point into larger cultural issues.
Well, certainly if we're talking sports shoes, they absolutely, I would imagine, have to be a big symbol of your position in society, because if you're out, you know, cutting hay in the field, sports shoes are the last thing on your mind and that, you know, would be on your radar screen.
Yeah, I think that many of today's sort of hottest sneakers come at a price point that exactly does that. It signifies status, it signifies fashion, or it's a part of fashion, but they're not the type of shoes that you actually, on a daily basis, maybe shoot basketballs or work in the fields. They have come to be so important, particularly in men's fashion, that they really serve that function primarily.
Yeah, I was thinking of the farm worker because I'm wondering when the first sports shoes actually turned up and where.
Well, that is one of the fascinating questions about the history of the sneaker. It's one of the most modern forms of footwear that we have. I mean, if you think about sandals or boots or high heels, I mean, these things date back centuries. But the sneaker is an invention of the 19th century. And so it took the sap of a tree, rubber. It took people, scientists, to be able to figure out how to make it stable and usable. And once that was done in sort of the middle of the 19th century, then all of a sudden, rubber was available for industry. It was available for footwear production. And that really is the genesis of the sneaker.
And I am a baby boomer, Elizabeth, and I pretty much remember as a kid in the 50s and 60s, when it came to sneakers, there were white kids and there were white kids.
Right.
What blew the roof off of sneaker design?
Well, you know, actually, if you go back to the 19th century, the first people to use sneakers were the upper classes, people who had time for leisure. And so they began to embrace this new form of footwear, one, because rubber was relatively expensive, given that it was the sap of a tree. You couldn't get very much of it at any given time. And so early sneakers were signifiers of privilege and leisure. And also when you wore your tennis whites and you kept them white, that was also a way of conveying status. And so sneakers start out as an expression of status, and then over the course of the 20th century, they sort of lose that status. So you're talking about the 50s and 60s when all there was available was, you know, a pair of canvas Keds, maybe a pair of canvas Converse. All of a sudden, the sneaker sort of bottomed out in terms of being a signifier of status, but that changes dramatically in the 1970s with the Me generation. The Me generation decides that they're going to focus on fitness in order to achieve personal best. And one of the ways that they do that is through conspicuous consumption of athletic attire. They join health clubs, and they begin wanting elite-level running shoes. And that's when Nike gets in the game and offers bright-colored, expensive running shoes that are able to segue very much from fitness into fashion.
Oh, I remember that happening. And when they cut that deal with Michael Jordan, which, as I recall, was when my son was born, 1984, because I remember seeing little baby Air Jordans.
Right.
So it cut across all age levels. And at the same time, we also saw the rise in hip-hop culture.
That's right. And so sort of at the same time that people are engaging in jogging in the 1970s and status sneakers are becoming found on the disco floor as well as, you know, in the gym, you begin to have basketball players who are coming up through street ball. Their moves are amazing and athletic. They become the superstars of the NBA. They begin to get signature shoes. And all of a sudden, within urban fashion, the signature shoes of these basketball players become central to urban fashion. And then when you finally get Air Jordans, with Michael Jordan signing with Nike, what's actually happening at that moment is it's bringing what is already an established urban fashion to a much wider audience.
An audience of every, you know, every skin color, every interest. So it really did break down barriers.
It did. And it also went global. And so what you see with sneaker culture as it develops after that watershed moment with Air Jordans, you also have to remember that Run DMC was the first musical group to get a sneaker deal when they signed with Adidas, that all of a sudden urban fashion, urban music, hip-hop is seeping into or being embraced by culture in a much wider way. And what that actually does is it also ups the ante for people interested in sneakers. So as everyone starts to wear Air Jordans, then for people in the know, they want rare pairs. Then they want retro pairs. They want brands that nobody's heard about. And that march leads towards high-end designers getting into sneaker production, new companies coming into sneaker production. And that is really where we are today, where there are so many different types of shoes available. But what I find very interesting is almost every single one of them conveys a different aspect of our social identity. And so particularly young men are using sneakers to craft that social identity in ways that men's fashion prior to this hasn't allowed.
Interesting. And before you and I talked, Elizabeth, I went on eBay and I checked. And speaking of status symbols and spending money, Kanye West Yeezy Boost 350 styles for Adidas, they're going for at least $1,000 a pair.
Correct.
More. And that's really being seen as, I've got a work of art, right? I'm not going to wear this going grocery shopping.
Well, you know, I think it's analogous to what high-end women's footwear goes for.
Good point.
And so I think that the same way that high-end women's shoes are used within women's fashion to construct those social identities, sneakers are now giving men that option as well.
I'm curious, when we talk about this exhibit that's going to be running through the end of February at the Toledo Museum of Art, out of the box, the rise of sneaker culture. What are some of the more interesting sports shoes that are on display?
Well, one of the challenges, actually, anytime you curate, is that curating is an exercise in constriction and limitation, right? And so you have to be able to get your hands on everything that you desire. But also when you look at something like sneakers, there are so many millions of sneakers out there that I really did try very hard to make sure that I got the most important or iconic sneakers to be on view in this exhibition. And so of those, there are some really important standout pieces. I think as a historian, I, of course, go back to the earliest pieces. We have the first Keds from 1916. We have the original Converse All-Star from 1917. The exhibition also has a picture of Chuck Taylor. One of the things, you know, we run around in Chuck Taylor shoes and nobody remembers who Chuck Taylor is. It's sort of analogous. Recently, they did a study of fourth graders, and the fourth graders all knew what Air Jordans were, but didn't know who Michael Jordan was.
Wow.
And so this even this idea of celebrity endorsement goes all the way back to the 30s when Chuck Taylor got his name on the Converse All-Star. And so we have those. We have a shoe of the exact same model that was worn by Jesse Owens when he practiced at the Olympics. It was given to him by a young shoemaker named Adi Dassler, who went on to create Adidas.
Ah.
And so that's a very seminal model to have in the exhibition. We also have the original Air Jordan 1, which you mentioned is so important. And we have the Superstar, of course. We have Puma Clyde, another icon from the 70s that continues to have resonance today. One of the things that I hope people understand when they come to see the exhibition is that almost every shoe is an OG, is an original model. And so you can see how some sneakers came into being and compare whether or not the designs have changed. You can see the original Nike waffle trainer. I mean, it's actually, there's quite a few very important sneakers in this exhibition.
Well, it sounds so cool. I think it's very worth a trip to Toledo to get to the Museum of Art to check out Out of the Box, The Rise of Sneaker Culture. It's a traveling exhibition from the Bata Shoe Museum in Toronto, where Elizabeth Semmelheck is the senior curator. And as we mentioned, Out of the Box, The Rise of Sneaker Culture will be at the Toledo Museum of Art through the end of February under the auspices of the American Federation of Arts. So fun talking shoes with you. We will have to do it again, Elizabeth. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Anytime.